And now Radio CJ, hosted by CJ Grace.
Can horses do yoga? Can massage fix your trusty steed's back, hip and joint pain and get him to win races? Nay, nay, some might say. Yes, says today's guest. She's April Love, founder of Holistic Horseworks and Horse Healers Academy. April, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for inviting me.
I have to say, when I Googled yoga for horses, I got all these people doing yoga on top of horses. And you really are the only one who's talking about yoga for the actual horse,
right,
rather than weird positions on a horse. I would think if you performed yoga on top of a horse, it's not that comfortable for the horse itself.
It's just you stretching. This is opening the horse from the inside and finding where glitches are.
So tell me about the equine musculoskeletal unwinding program that you've developed. It's quite a mouthful there.
Yeah, it's $16,000 in various classes that I've taken, and I would take it back to my spirit horse that I was doing endurance with and see what he liked in what order.
So this was a horse that you owned and you learned all this material. Was it for humans or was it for animals, the material that you learned that you based your program on?
It was mainly for horses, but you worked on people in the class because you're the same musculoskeletal. If a human gets on all fours, everything's about the same.
What kind of training did that involve?
Traveling to various places. So Dr. Regan Golub up in Washington, Dr. Julie Montgomery in Taft, Tennessee, studying with Maureen Rogers for cranial sacral in Santa Cruz.
Is it mainly Western techniques? You said cranial sacral, which people in the bodywork world will have heard of. But do you mix any, say, Eastern techniques in with that?
But that is kind of Eastern technique. So you're blending acupuncture, acupressure, energy balancing, releasing defense posture, balancing yin and yang, and getting the body to relax before you're doing a little bit of orthobionomy, getting rid of a muscle spasm and a positional release so the bone can relax back into where it should be.
You claim to give owners and trainers techniques tailored to their specific animal's needs just by looking at a photograph of the horse in question. So how is that possible?
Correct. I do long distance readings. I can ask atlas axis, ribs, withers. I can ask the bones if they're where they want to be. And then I sell DVDs that teach you how to do it yourself. So it teaches you how to find it, but a lot of first-time people trying this are afraid to try. So I give them a 6-page printout on everything that's out of whack in their horse, and then all they have to do is little bits by little bit, and when they're done, they send me another picture, and I let them know what they missed. And a lot of people just keep giving me testimonials that it worked, and their dangerous horse is now a happy horse with a totally new personality.
So this doesn't just fix physical problems, it also fixes emotional or behavioral problems in the horse.
Well, if you are in a lot of pain in your body and someone keeps asking you to do the same movement over and over and over and you can't do it because of pain, and that's the repetitive movement in training, you're going to get crankier because nobody's listening to you that it hurts to do that. So that's where your training and behavioral issues come from.
So is one of the most important things how the horse is hoofs are balanced on the ground, is that right?
Right, because you have 12 Ting acupuncture meridians in the hooves, and when the hooves are out of balance, your organs are going to be out of balance. And I've seen most foals by 3 to 7 months of age are already crooked, turning one leg out when they go to graze. It starts your high lows in the front end, and then the compensations do the medial lateral imbalance in the hinds, and then you have four hooves that don't match. And I tell people, squat down behind your horse, look at the back of the hooves, you'll see four hooves that don't match.
And why is that? Is it that the way that they've been shod is wrong, or the way that the farrier's worked on them has been wrong? What causes that problem?
So it's how they stand on it 24 hours a day. The farrier or barefoot trimmer can cut and shape the hoof to how they want, but 6 to 8 weeks later, the hoof is going to grow back to how the horse is standing on the hoof and loading it. So when the pectorals are overly tight from the horse pulling with the front end, they jam and load from the inside of the hoof to the out. So the outside of the hoof will be bigger and the inside will be very straight and the heel will be underslung.
So is it a bit like either wearing two heels of different height or having a stone in your shoe? So you walk on that day in, day out, and you end up completely in pain and all your body misaligned. Is that a good analogy?
Yeah, I tell people they don't understand the high-low with one heel being 54 degrees and the other 52, that it's like walking around in a high heel shoe and a slipper. And then you're putting a straight tweed saddle on the top of that and tightening up the girth on a crooked horse, and then the saddle works against the horse.
And what made you choose to work on animals rather than people?
I've just always been in horses. Ever since I could read and watch TV, it was all about horses. Every junior grammar school I was into, I read every single book in the library, like everything, like King of the Wind when I was only like 8 years old.
And how old were you when you learned how to ride?
About 8 years old.
And when did you have your own horse?
About 12 years old. My grandparents bought three horses for us to share up in Santa Rosa, and we'd go up on the weekends, ride the horses, and then go back to San Francisco. So I was lucky growing up.
What, from the age of four or so you were?
Enthralled with horses.
If you were thinking about horses when you were not even in elementary school, maybe you were a horse in a previous life.
Oh, for sure. I always tell people, you know, you're a two-legged. I don't work on two-leggeds. I just work on the four-leggeds, the quadrupeds.
It's funny because one of the interviews I did was with Richard Adams, who wrote Watership Down. And he told me he much preferred being with animals to being with people.
Oh, and they're so grateful where the people are just bitching and moaning and whining. And I tell people, whatever you're focusing on is what you're going to get more of. So if you keep focusing on negative, you're going to have more negative in your life.
Who are the people that come to you?
The average client is the person that saved or rescued a horse that they fell in love with, and they didn't realize that they're in so much pain, and that's why they were at the horse rescue or why they were $500. Then they spend everything they have with the Western medicine veterinarian trying to figure out what's going on with the horse. And when they get frustrated with all of that, they find me on YouTube or the internet. And so I was told that I should write a book, and I'm very proud of it. It's called Horse 101, Everything You Wish You'd Known Before You Got Your First Horse.
And it has some lovely cartoons. They remind me of the British cartoonist Thelwell, who had those fat little ponies.
I just loved it. I'd saw one of those cartoons and a horse and rider, and the horse is turning around saying, "Does this saddle make me look fat?" So I decided that that was the kind that I want, and I found a lady in Argentina to do my drawings of the whole little story of everything I wish I had known before I got into horses. Everything from what you should feed them, what a colic is, that they need body work, that you should have an equine dentist, and there's just cute little cartoon pictures, and what a involuntary dismount is.
Isn't that just falling off because you are knocked off the horse somehow?
Yeah, correct, it is. But it's a cute name for why you're in the hospital. Oh, you did that involuntary dismount. But it's why it might happen. The pain from the saddle. They're not training in behavioral issues. So in cute little story way with about 20 or some odd pictures, it just tells you about the different breeds, what you want to get, what ages you want to get, what you want to feed them, what you want to stay away from, and what professionals that you want to be looking for in an affordable way of putting it all together. So the older horse people just going to pick it up and laugh, go, yep, yep, did that, yep, yep, yep. And the new person is going to go, oh, wow, there's, you know, some really nice information in an easy way to understand.
Now, a lot of your work is teaching people to use particular techniques on their own animals. What if they barely know anything about horse anatomy?
That's what my whole program is set up for, because that's where I was. I would pay someone to work on my horse. It would be better for a little while. It would come back and nobody could tell me why. Where is it sore? Where does it hurt? So I say that most of my DVDs are for dummies. It's a real basic introductory. You just do this. You don't have to know what you're doing. You just put your finger here, count to 10, move the head up and around, and all of a sudden things shift and change. And people are like, wow, I did that. And they get this sense of like pride and joy inside that they could make a change. And I've broken it down into simple ways. So I don't use big words like thoracic one is mediolaterally rotated 3 degrees. You know, I'm just like, this bone isn't where it should be. This is where it should be. This is where you push and turn so that it can move back to where it should be. We don't do forceful moves on bones, but they do move from the inside out.
But a horse is a huge, heavy animal. How can you manipulate that as a little human?
My youngest student was 12 and my oldest was almost 80. So they're really soft, deep, effective moves. And I have osteopaths come to my class that just keep saying, it just can't be this easy. We've been abusing our bodies and lifting this and pushing this. And you just lift and hold this and let the body just unwind. And everything I do is just soft little moves. But 205 bones and 700 muscles all shift, change, and rebalance.
What are your success stories? Can you tell me how you've worked on animals and made a significant change?
Worked with some clients that were top endurance horses that went from like 11th in the world to like 6th and sold horses over in Dubai, racehorse trainer over in the Netherlands, now like the number one woman racehorse trainer and was invited to LA. She won the Darley Award with her horses.
So you're saying that the work she did with you changed the horses she was training from not doing so well in races to actually being winners. Is that correct?
She would win occasionally, but now she was winning more often. Like her mare beat out some stallions in a race that she shouldn't have been able to. So everything we do just lengthens the strides, allows the ribs to get more oxygen and more drive and push from the hind end. And that's going to give you a horse that's strong to the finish and competes well for 5 to 10 years instead of being arthritic and broken down in 2 years.
Is that the normal story for a racehorse? They're just over and done with after 2 years and out retired.
Even barrel racing horses and gymkhana horses and reining horses, usually they're done after 2 to 3 years of competition. They're injecting joints instead of having the joint load correctly.
Oh, injecting with
either Adequan or steroids for like kissing spine, something so that the horse can't feel the pain of the joint not loading correctly so that he can keep competing kind of like a motorcycle, but you're still going to be breaking down the joints because they're not loading correctly, even if you're just lubing them so the horse can't feel the pain.
And you're saying that that is not an inevitable end to a racehorse, that they can go and go and go if they have proper treatment or
you're going to have some tightening up, and younger is always going to have more oomph than like a 12 or 13 year old horse, but there's quite a few horses that can race until they're like 8, 9, 10. It is a lot of stress on the tendons and ligaments.
We're going to another issue there. So isn't horse racing inherently over-demanding and unhealthy for a horse's body, would you say?
Definitely, because they're on the horse's back by age one, and they're galloping anaerobically. Mm-hmm. They're sucking up their diaphragm, and then you have this off-the-track thoroughbreds that they're trying to sell to people to rehabilitate for a dressage horse, and they're so crooked, and they're so hollow-backed and high-headed. If they had done the body work ahead of time, they would have lasted longer on the track, but we're riding them way too young.
Oh, so you think that they would do better if they were used as racehorses when they were older?
Right.
What age would you say?
Well, like with Arabians, they don't start till they're 3 or 4. They have short races, 4.5 to 7 furlongs for Arabians on the track, like around California and Los Angeles.
And what is the norm for most racehorses?
I think they're galloping in races by 2 to 3 and done by 4.
Goodness, so it's like taking a toddler and expecting them to win races and not mess their bodies up as they're growing.
Right.
We touched on this issue, but when do things start to go awry for horses, and how do they go awry in terms of body alignments and this kind of thing?
So I've seen it as young as 2 to 3 months of age on foals. We're genetically making weaker foals. There isn't minerals in the feeds. When they're born, they're standing up and falling down with weak fetlocks. They're having issues going to sleep next to a fence, waking up under the fence. So what I find starts it all is, we say the first rib is out. It's not out, it's just tweaked in a way that doesn't allow the shoulder to come through freely. And they'll start standing with that hoof out in front, and they don't want to canter on that lead. And we've been told that they're a left-handed or a right-handed horse, so that you're supposed to make them do it more to strengthen that side. And if it can't work correctly and you do it more, like you painting the ceiling all day and your shoulder hurts, and then you have to paint the ceiling the next day and you're like, oh, all the muscles are tightening up. So, and that's what just starts the whole chain of events. So if people start looking at the horses before they're even yearlings, they'd be lasting a lot longer. We wouldn't have the arthritic knees
when you're
and
saying
hocks
people
and
start,
fetlocks.
When you're saying people start to look at the horses, if they had a proper alignment treatment.
Right.
You also have worked out a horse yoga program. This sounds very strange to me. How on earth do you get a horse to do yoga?
The owner's involved, but there are 5 diagnostic stretches that if your horse can't do the yoga, you have a glitch. And if you tack it up and ride it, you're going to have a bigger glitch. So the horse stretching their nose back to the hind end should be able to reach the high knee or the stifle in America. And if they can't, you have a glitch in the 7 cervical neck bones.
So what are you doing? You're helping the horse to move
carrot stretch.
A carrot stretch. So
yeah, they follow a carrot all the way back to their hind end, and they should be able to do that easily. And you can do that when you feed in the morning. My horses, we would just go down. They would just turn their head around, put it on their butt, and wait for us to get there with a carrot on both sides. If we came down one morning and he could only reach halfway, and then I know he did something in the pasture that night that I need to fix, or it's going to get worse.
Do you also have to work with the limbs as well for yoga? You can't do that with
carrots,
can you?
That's number two. Yeah. So number two is big, you pick up the knee and big inside slow stretches. Okay. And that's stretching the shoulder. So all our turning is in the front end. And if they can't do that, then they can't turn well on the front end. So, and then we do that down into a drunken horse pose. And that opens up the withers in the front end. And it helps.
So that's crossing the two front legs.
Yeah.
Down below.
Yeah, the old blazing saddles where the horse was drunk leaning against the wall and they're standing like this with, yeah, the front feet crossed. And the third one is the tail pull, where you're pulling on the tail and that stretches out the lumbar like an inversion table for humans. Okay, and your lumbar psoas area is what picks up and moves the whole hind end. So it tractions the spine and brings blood and oxygen in.
So is that yoga or is that you doing body work on the horse though?
It's just a stretch.
It's just a stretch.
Because we're not adjusting anything. The horse is digging in with their hind feet and pulling on you. And then you scratch 6 inches straight out from the top of the tail and they do a butt tuck. So they stretch their lumbar area and their pelvis. And the last one you scratch in the girth area and they should just spring their whole ribs. And they tighten their intercostals and they stretch out the whole psoas area.
This does beg another question. How do you get a horse to agree to do this kind of stuff? Don't they get annoyed with you and fight it?
People find day one and day two they're a little cranky because it's like you going to your first yoga class when you've never gone to one and you're a little cranky and tight. But by day 3 and 4 they're noticing a whole different behavior in their horses. They're eager, they're waiting at the gate, they're not hard to catch anymore, they're looking forward to the stretches because you're actually releasing endorphins and doing something besides just brush it and put a saddle on it and ride it.
So you're saying that they actually come to enjoy it?
Oh, yeah.
And are you doing this or are you showing other people how to do it on their own animals?
Well, I have a 9.5-minute video on YouTube that shows people how to do it. And that's how 90% of all my clients find me. They said they did the yoga for a week and the horse is moving totally different and they want to learn more.
Have you ever in your equine career had any problems with horses getting a bit violent with you?
Only on the belly lifts if they have a sour stomach or ulcers. They don't like lifting up into that area, but pretty much they like all the rest of them.
You've worked with horses for many, many years. Have you ever had any accidents with them or problems with horses behaving badly?
Yes, and that was all before I learned all the body work. So someone else's horse had kicked me in the jaw, breaking my jaw as we were just going around to brush him on the other side. But she'd thrown a flake of hay down in front of him and he'd always had to fight for his feed. So they can be very defensive in situations. But when we come into them with the soft body work, they seem to be very open and willing and accepting.
How do vets react to what you're doing?
It's good because I've actually had some veterinarians, vet techs, and osteopaths who want to learn more and know that they're only treating the symptom. take my 3-day classes, level one, level two, and level three. Level one is realigning the skeletal spine, two is releasing all the soft tissue fascia, and three is decompressing the cranial bones. And the few veterinarians that have taken the courses are just amazed.
Are any of them, though, a little resistant? Because if you're not doing something that requires people to go back to the vet afterwards, then you're sort of competing with their business in a funny kind of way, are you not?
So in local areas where I live, you might have the vet saying, oh, you know, she's not a veterinarian or a vet tech, so she can't really work on your horse or do anything for your horse. What I do is I teach horse owners how to work on the horse themselves. That's what more of my class is about, so that they don't have to wait until the horse is lame and spend $350 to $1,000 with diagnostics that don't tell them where it is. I teach them how to see the pattern of where everything is and how to work on it in little bits themselves so you don't get to the broke down horse stage.
How often would a horse need to see you or be worked on? Because, for example, if you as a human go to see a chiropractor or a massage therapist, usually it's not done in one or two sessions. You have to keep on going back. Is that what happens with the work that you do?
Yes, because you have a muscle memory and a pattern of how you are moving. And even when you go to the chiropractor, the worst thing you can do is get right back in the car, lift your right leg up, and go back into that repetitive pattern. And you just, by the time you get home, your pelvis is already out, and your atlas and axis is already out. You turn to back out of the parking spot. They don't tell you that you should be walking for 20 to 30 minutes after your first session and to give you some stretching and strengthening exercises to hold your new skeletal alignment. And that's why I did the yoga. It's a strengthening and stretching so that they can hold their core again. And you have four hooves that are out of balance, so the next day the horse is going to be back out of alignment, but not as far as when I first worked on him. And the yoga will keep realigning the body every day. The muscle that's in spasm and shortens is what's pulling the bones out of alignment. So you need to stretch that. And they're told not to ride or work the horse for 3 days after I work on them. And just to let them walk and enjoy their body and let it relax.
If you are very good at helping trainers have horses that win races, don't they want you to be the best kept secret? Because if everybody was like that, then they'd have a lot more competition.
Yeah, my racehorse trainer in the Netherlands, when she was interviewed, she said, and body work is very important, you know, why she had so many winning horses in her stables. And the lady who sold her horse in Dubai for $700,000, you know, there was no mention of, you know, how she got here or anything.
So, and this was a prize-winning racehorse.
Yeah, 100-mile endurance racehorse that went over to Dubai to race. It's just sad that, you know, they don't want the others to be as good, and they keep it as their little secret so that they can keep the competitive edge. Where when I used to work the shows for the Welch Cob people, section A, B, C, and D, that was in Sacramento, but it's just a different type of show with the breeds. And the Welch Cob, they have four different classes for the sizes and what they do. And they would share me because they were all breeders and trainers and happy. And, oh, your horse isn't doing well. You got to have April fix it. You know, and oh, yep, he didn't want to pick up that right lead canter. You got to go have April fix it. And they all wanted to do well. And that was a really great environment to work in.
But there's not quite as much money at stake, though, if you win prizes in that group than racehorses in Dubai and Europe and that kind of thing.
Right.
So what countries have you worked in?
Australia, New Zealand, UK, Holland, Brussels, France, Switzerland, Alaska, Canada.
Do you see a lot of differences from one country to the next in how horses are treated and attitudes towards horses?
Well, the people that find me have given up on everything else. So the attitudes of those people are about the same. The food and water when I go there, like in the UK where it's so wet and they're on the silage and the water's terrible. The horses have different issues in Australia where it's hot and dry versus Alaska and Canada where, you know, winter is, you know, minus 20 degrees and trying to keep the water warm enough for the horses to drink. So it changes. And when I go somewhere three times, I try and have someone that I teach take over in that area. So I have a certified instructor in Australia and Canada and Alaska and Brussels and UK and California and Indiana now.
And these are people who've learnt your program and are authorized to
Right, they've been with me it. For 4 years studying.
What's one of the successes that you've had that really warms the cockles of your heart?
One of my first clients in Oregon, just from the DVD and the reading, she had a dangerous horse that was 17 years old, and everyone in the barn told her to get rid of him.
What was he doing?
Just dangerous to go catch, dangerous to be around, and everybody said, oh, he's going to hurt you, you need to get rid of him. And it was kind of wintery time, so she just started working on him with the DVD. She said every time she watched the DVD, she saw something new. And people were coming back in, I think it was 2 months later, and they said, oh, you bought a new horse. Who's the new horse? You know, because he was even a different color when he was out of pain, and he was on the right nutrition, because I go through viral and bacterial issues and nutrition issues in the readings that I give people. And she'd followed everything to the key, and everyone in the barn is like, who's the new horse? He's really nice. It's the same one you told me to get rid of. I fixed him.
What about the horror stories?
Just when I suggest that we should work on the horse before something breaks down, and oh, no, no, he's fine. The veterinarian said he's fine. He just needs a day off, and they go race him or do something again, and then they tear the suspensory or tendon when I already told them it was sore and it was loading too much. And they're like, oh, no, no, he's fine. I'm like, he's not fine. So that's really sad. In endurance riding, I used to see that a lot with the 50 and 100-mile endurance horses. And it's like, we need to work on your horse soon. No, 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 he's fine, until he's broke. And then it's really hard to get him going again because something's torn or strained.
Does that mean permanent retirement and permanent pain for the horse?
If you tear a suspensory or tendon, it doesn't always heal as good as it was before. And if this was your 100-mile endurance horse that you climbed mountains with over rocks and stuff, yeah, you're probably looking for a new horse.
Not many people have horses, but a lot of folks have dogs. And I hear you work on dogs too.
I do. And I put out a DVD and workbook on how to work on your doggy yourself called Canine Musculoskeletal Unwinding. And I find that the dogs are out by 3 to 4 months of age because of collar training and being yanked on, and especially the more aggressive breeds. So, and it's being, as they get older, called hip dysplasia.
So you're saying that just pulling a dog on the leash creates hip dysplasia?
So I'm saying that it creates a body out of alignment. And I'm noticing that on a lot of the dogs, the atlas is turned to the left, and most people are right-handed, and they're, you know, pulling on the collar this way, or the puppy's running to the end of what they're tied to, and their neck's out of alignment. And if your atlas is dropping to your left, I'm finding that the right hip goes back. And if the atlas is going to the right, I'm finding that the left hip is back. And I made a PowerPoint presentation with x-rays where you can see when the whole psoas and lumbar is going this way that the hip socket isn't where it should be and how the top of the leg can be grinding in the socket. So if we could catch that earlier before they're 6 months of age, hopefully fewer dogs would have hip dysplasia and pain as they get older.
Isn't that pretty much incurable? Or at least by conventional medicine, hip dysplasia, isn't that something that they can't fix?
Well, by the time that they're having issues and get the x-rays, the whole humerus has just ground away all the cartilage in the joint. So no, you can't fix that. It's like a person getting a hip replacement. It's because they weren't loading the ankle and the knee and the hip correctly, and that's why they wear down the joint. So if you can catch it earlier, can we maybe prevent it, is what I would say yes to. Can you cure hip dysplasia? Probably not, because you've degenerated the joint.
What other problems have you seen in dogs?
That's about it. They're pretty simple. So dogs, cats, sheep, goats, all of those, if they don't want to move a certain way, they don't. Where horses, we force them to move a certain way, left lead canter, right lead canter, run around the barrel to the right, whatever it is we're doing, we're forcing a repetitive move. The dogs are like, I don't want to run on left lead, so I'll just run on right lead all the time.
Unless they're a greyhound, I suppose greyhounds would have more work needed to them, and they don't last too long for racing at all.
No, they don't last too long.
Have you ever worked on a greyhound?
No, but I've seen a lot of them.
What other animals have you worked on? You mentioned a sheep, so how do you work on a sheep? Does a sheep
Same
fight you?
Same skeleton, so... I was up in Canada teaching a clinic, and this lady had this pet sheep that she could communicate with. And she said, Atlas and Axis and Ribs and Weathers. And I'm like, Okay, well, we're going to have to put him in a little pen because you can't hold him like you would a dog or a horse because a sheep's going to be all tense. And so we just put him in a little box just as long and as wide as the sheep. And I was just over him just kind of doing little moves until he was all done. But you can't put a collar on him or, you know, like a horse, a halter on him.
So the horses let you do things. And Obviously dogs, if they believe it's for their own good, will most likely knuckle down and submit.
Yeah, well, the owner is petting them and, you know, sitting in their lap as we're working on them. And on the front of my DVD, the dog, you can actually tell, is smiling, and we didn't have to Photoshop that. And when I first started working on her, she was all scared, and she's a rescue dog. And 35 minutes later, she's got this big smile, and she's like, oh, I feel so good in my body. And the dogs are usually like a one-time thing because it was something collar or puppy related when they were younger. Where like a working horse, it's an all the time thing, just like an athlete. You can't go run a 10K marathon every other week and not get body work. Same thing with a horse. Cats, when I visit their house, jump up on the table and they'll be like, that cat doesn't like strangers. So I said, yeah, I know. He's just asking me for to work on his neck and his hips. And then he's gone and we don't see him again. And one egret that we found on the road that we thought was dead and my friend was just going to pick feathers and it was alive, so he handed it to me in the car, and I'm like, what do I do with this? And just kind of feeling his neck, I go, oh, his neck's out. And I went, and he woke up, and we gave him some water, and then he walked off.
So this was a white egret that you rescued almost from death.
They're the little miniature ones. Yeah, he was roadkill.
Goodness me. How do people find out more about what you do, April?
I have about 147 self-help videos on my YouTube channel, Holistic Horseworks.
That's a lot.
People say that they stumbled across me, and 2 to 3 hours later, after watching all the videos and taking notes, they went out and diagnosed their own horse of everything that their veterinarian had missed. Oh, yep, he's got that. Oh, yeah, he's got that. And yep, he's sore here. Yep, just like her video. And yep, he's sore here too. Like she said, he would be sore.
And do you have techniques that people can use for those specific problems online as well?
I sell DVDs that they're called Homesteady DVDs, so people can learn it at home, because some people can travel to my 3-day classes, which are global. But others, you've got 5 kids or 4 dogs and cats and a husband and a job. So we made the Homesteady Level 1, Level 2 for horses and Level 1 for dogs so that people can stay home and learn a little bit at home with their own animals.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, April.
Thank you for inviting me.
My guest on Radio CJ today was April Love. You can find out more about her work by visiting her websites, horsehealersacademy.com and holistichorseworks.com. That's holistic starting with an H rather than the British spelling that would start with a W. April Love has also written 2 books, Horse 101, Everything You Wish You Had Known Before You Got Your First Horse, and Horse 102, Holistic Alternatives. They're available in both paperback and Kindle on Amazon.
Radio CJ was presented and produced by CJ Grace. Thank you for listening.